Welcome to In Their Words, the podcast from the UPMC Pinnacle Foundation and UPMC in Central PA, where we share the real stories behind life-changing medical care. Today, we have an extraordinary story of family, faith, and the gift of life itself. When David White's kidney function began declining, he faced the daunting prospect of dialysis and an uncertain wait for a transplant. What he didn't expect was that his match would come from within his own family. Today, we are joined by David and his son-in-law, Ray Chung, who 4 years ago embarked on a journey that would change both their lives forever. This is a story about the power of generosity, the strength of family bonds, and the incredible medical expertise that makes miracles possible right here in central Pennsylvania.
Well, my full name is David White, and I live here in Dillsburg, as does Ray, a little ways away from us. We've been here since we retired from the work. Both my wife and I retired on the same day and moved out here. Well, it's going on 9 years now to the Dillsburg area. We originally lived in northern New Jersey. Other than that, I guess just being retired is the key to it out here. Grandchildren are here. That's how we ended up here.
My name is Ray, last name Chung. Grew up in Malaysia, came to the U.S. in 2001 to Messiah University. That's where I met my wife, Heather. And yeah, we've got three kids. Micah is 14. We have Delia, she is 11. And then Eden, she is 8. And yeah, we live here in Dillsburg. And yeah, happy, just excited for the summer and appreciated a lot of just even being in this area, experiencing the different seasons. And yeah, here we are with three kids.
Yes. Ray met my daughter, who is his wife, Heather, at Messiah. Well, both my son and my daughter went to Messiah. And also my daughter-in-law went to Messiah, as Ray did. So everybody in the family went to Messiah. I would say probably a good 2 to 3 years before, my numbers were constantly going down as far as my kidney function. When we lived in New Jersey, they started getting worried about it, and they looked into it. They did many tests back there and could not really come up with any reason as to why. But when I got out here, probably the year or two before the actual transplant, yeah, I would sleep probably close to a good 9-10 hours a night. And yet, after lunch, 1 o'clock, 1:30, something like that, I would take an hour nap because I was tired. You didn't realize that that's what was happening with the kidney not functioning properly. So it just became a usual thing for me, automatically have lunch and then take my nap for the afternoon. Actually, when I first came out here, I was not going to a UPMC doctor. He moved to York, and he put me in touch with a doctor up here in Camp Hill, who was Dr. Shaw. And that's who my new doctor was when things started really getting serious. We were watching it with this first doctor. I came out here, and the numbers just gradually kept getting worse and worse as far as my GFR and all that. So the new doctor, Dr. Shaw, I probably was only seeing him maybe a little over a year and something, but it was coming down to the point where he said, you got to get on a transplant list. And then we were starting to talk about going on dialysis. So that's how it ended up. And from there, it moved rather quickly. To me, it did. The summer of June, I would say it was June of 2020, that's when they started testing me to see if I was a candidate to be even on the transplant list. And it was a lot of testing. I went through a lot of things that I hadn't had ever done before, a stress test, things like that. And they did all kinds of blood work and stuff like that. But by the end of June, that's when we knew we could actually be put on a transplant list and that I should start looking for a donor on my own also.
David's journey from fatigue and declining kidney function to needing a transplant happened gradually, then all at once. As his numbers worsened and dialysis loomed, the race was on to find a matching donor. What started with Facebook posts and church announcements would lead to an unexpected answer, much closer to home. The testing process for both recipient and donor is rigorous, and for good reason. As you'll hear, Ray's decision to donate wasn't made lightly, and the emotional complexity of having a family member as a donor added layers that few transplant patients experience.
Well, I originally started out by actually putting things out. I, of course, had a Facebook page. I actually put out a request on there that I was in need of a kidney, and I put out what my blood type was and had to be a match to that or very close to it. I put it in our church, different places in the church, different things like that. And also then started testing relatives that I had. Now, that was interesting. My own son could not be a match. It was different ones were coming up and was not being able to be a match for me. That was getting kind of stressful. Gee, how long am I going to be on this transplant? And it actually came down to the point where we were 1 week away of setting up the equipment for dialysis when I found out that I possibly had a match. And you're speaking to the other guy that was my match, which just blew me away.
Yeah, for me, you heard that it was earlier in June that he was notified and started some of this process. Heather and I, my wife and I, we made our first. So the numbers started looking rough in kind of the June timeframe. We heard about it probably at the middle to the end of summer, so probably around August. So we came back from our summer vacation. So around August 2020 was when my wife and I both made the initial contact with the transplant team. And it was just a whole series of stuff. And I appreciated the rigor of the steps and the seriousness, the care that it took. Like, so the consent call, the health intake process, the lab work, and all the different testings and so on and so forth, the EKG before it's even approved. And obviously on our side, Heather and I were both also really prayerful about the whole process. And we didn't want to share any of our process and journey before even knowing what would happen. So my first initial contact with UPMC was August, but it probably wasn't until October when it was approved from UPMC that I was approved that we shared the news with Dave and my mother-in-law, Lois. I don't know, Dave, if you remember the evening that you and mom came over to our house and we just kind of had the conversation. That was also for me like a defining moment that, you know, it was both, yes, while you needed a kidney, but it was also a, hey, are you sure you want to do this? Do you want to talk about that evening? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. It comes flooding back to me in different parts now when I think about it. But yeah, we had a great concern that, okay, Ray has three kids. He's got to think about his own future. And it was a hard position to be in because I knew I needed a kidney, but then, and Ray was almost a perfect match as far as the numbers went. And we just looked at each other. We talked about it. We prayed about it for a long time when we heard that he was possibly going to be a match. And it's something that someone's donating. It's got to be thought out quite thoroughly. You can't just jump into it and say, oh, well, I'll worry about that later. You have to think about what would be in the future. But it's just something that we were a little stressed about, it, to say the least.
Yeah, and for me, I think I remember, you know, obviously there were a lot of tears that evening as we just kind of talked through that and understand the significance of the conversation. But it wasn't one that I went into it lightly. Like through all the testings and the preceding months, I was able to do a bunch of research myself. And so, for example, I had never intended or even thought much about organ donation. But in my research process, I read about and just looked into that living donor was reported to have 97% success rate at a 1 year mark and 86% at a 5 year mark. So as I kind of thought through this and worked through it and even thinking about at any given time, there's 100,000 people waiting for life-saving organ transplants in the US alone. And with a high percentage of that specifically for kidney. And I've always sought to take seriously convictions of like, what does it mean to be a good steward? What does it mean to be generous? And from everything that I've read and researched both on organ donation and the care afterwards, both for the recipient and the donor, for me, it very quickly became a no-brainer that we, through the way that we are designed as humans, can live really well-functioning life with one kidney. And so I didn't see in some ways like, wow, what a heroic or noble thing that you're doing. I saw that it was a real need right within my realm, and that's something that I am able to be part of, yeah, supporting and being part of helping. And so it was very much a quick, not flippant, but like, yeah, it made sense, and obviously discussed it through with my wife, Heather. And that evening was a real defining moment where we kind of collectively said, yeah, what a joy to be able to step into this opportunity to serve and honor to do so. And just to backtrack, I don't take it for granted how on earth that I grew up in Malaysia, and through all the different, whether it's blood type to size of kidney to the health of the kidney functioning, that this is a match. And so truly just grateful for the opportunity to be able to have this experience and be part of my father-in-law's journey.
After months of testing and careful consideration, Ray was approved as David's donor in October 2020. But as they would soon learn, having a match was just the beginning. The COVID-19 pandemic would test their patience and resolve as their surgery was canceled not once, not twice, but three times. When March 30th, 2021 finally arrived, both men walked into UPMC Harrisburg knowing their lives would be forever changed. What happened next showcases not just the remarkable skill of the transplant team, but the small gestures of compassion that make all the difference during life's most vulnerable moments.
Well, I'll jump in here. The transplant center team was, they were just fantastic. Right down from the person that I met first, we met first. It was the pre-operation, set up everything for us. And the different doctors, we met them several times. And it just was amazing how they could keep everything together. And they knew, you know, and I have, with UPMC, of course, I have the portal. And I mean, I could look at a result almost immediately after it was done there. It was just amazing that they would have that much control over everything that quickly. And all the information they gave us was, it put my wife and I at ease. It seemed, I'll say this, it seemed after we realized that Ray was going to be my donor, I had kind of a piece of it, you know, with the whole thing. Before that, I tell you, I was scared. I didn't know what was going to be the result. I knew my numbers were getting worse and worse. And when we started with the doctors, like Dr. Chang and Dr. Lady, and there was the other doctor, I will forget his name, Bray will probably remember it, Dr. Menon, that's right, that basically was one of the ones doing my surgery when it did happen. But just, I mean, there was Dr. Hoffman, who was a nephrologist that was there that would go over all my blood results each time, and they would sometimes say, well, we want this a little bit higher or lower this, that. It just was amazing how they kept it all together. And any phone call I made in that, you know, we had a concern, they were on top of it. You either got an answer immediately or they called you back in about 10 minutes. It was just amazing.
The other thing I would add is keeping in mind during that time. So when we were initially scheduled, it was November 2020. And as you may recall, that was at the onset of COVID. So our actual surgery was actually canceled three times upon having scheduled. Like, so it was scheduled, but it was canceled because of COVID emergency situations only, or so on and so forth. So it was rescheduled three times, which made it challenging to just kind of keep in the million process. But back to your question on being provider, I don't know if you can see, I have this folder that has all these notes just from different people. Majority of these are staffers. Dr. Danielle Lady, these are the nurses on staff. So just really kind and very encouraging. And that's they put together because I wanted to get a sense on like, what happened in the surgery because I was totally out. So it showed like Dr. Menon and Dr. Lady in this photo, like they are operating on the kidney, right? Like, so again, just to put it in perspective, my surgery was, I think we both checked in at the same time in Harrisburg, that the hospital that we drive by, I don't know, several times a month. So we both checked in together. I was around 6, 6:30. And then his surgery was around, wait, 8:30 or 9. So again, just to think about the miracle, right? Like the technology, the advancement, the care, where healthcare really advancement and such that like they are able to take it out of me at 6, 6:30, give it a good scrub, clean it up, and then put it into Dave in at 9, 9:30. And by 11, 11:30, it's done. And so just thinking about that, and just you talked about specific people, March 30th is actually my daughter's birthday. So I told our daughter Delia that like, hey, sorry that dad won't be able to be with you on your birthday. And she understood. So they were so kind to give my daughter Delia an extra kidney as an extra birthday gift. And I say that to say, you know, these are the little gestures of even comforting my family that means a great deal to me while my father-in-law and I are getting quote-unquote checked in that very morning. And so, yeah, like, again, some of the subtleties, I was asking innocently, like, how do you decide which kidney to give Dave? And they say, well, you are keeping the stronger kidney. I'm like, huh, really? And they say, yeah, that's our commitment to our donor. Now, you have two really healthy kidneys, but as for our donor perspective, we want to ensure that you have a strong kidney. So again, I don't think about those things. And there are times, there are days that like different thoughts run through my head, right? Like what happens if this, then this? And so one of which is what happens if I do wound up needing a kidney sometimes down the road? And at least what they indicated and I've learned is that like, no, you will be on the top of the list as a kidney donor. And these are things I have never thought about prior to that. And just again, the care, and even as I indicated, each time the surgery date is rescheduled, they redid all the testing. Now, it's annoying because I hate getting blood drawn and, you know, but it shows the level of rigor that they go through to make sure that everything is set and well. And so Jackie, she, I believe, is on the donor care support team. I forget her actual title, or Amy, who's a social worker on the transplant team. Like, they just kept really, really good in touch with me. Dr. Lady even called me personally during, again, those were during the COVID season. She says, just to check in, like, how are you doing through all this when the transplant was being canceled? So, you know, just so, so, so appreciate all the different team members, both from the social work side to the donor support side, intake side, to the actual surgeons.
I don't know if Ray remembers this. One of the times it was canceled was because of shooting myself in the foot. I actually had Mohs surgery for skin cancer in my ear in February. That was one of the reasons it was canceled. They had done the surgery. And if I were to describe that surgery, it probably sounded worse than doing the transplant. But they actually had to take a fairly big divot out of the flap of the top of my left ear. And they actually took extra skin down at the bottom of my ear and had it started growing it to fill in the hole. And that was the early beginning of February. Well, towards the middle to the end of February, Dr. Chang took a look at it. And he says, I think I want that to heal a little more than it is. So that was one of the times that we got set back on the surgery. We were actually looking at a date, and he took a look at it, and he says, I think I want another couple of weeks for that to heal more. So yeah, each time with the COVID, it was frustrating. It was, you know, you get yourself all, I won't say worked up, but you get yourself already prepared. You think it's going to happen, and, you know, a couple of days or a day before the surgery, they say, we think we're going to cancel it because COVID is just too rampant.
I was approved October 1st, 2020. Surgery was March 30th, 2021.
Well, I can say I can remember that morning. We both parked on the same level of the parking garage, And we were walking in together, and we got checked into the surgery waiting room where they hold you. Ray was over in one curtained off room. I was over in another, and we could hear each other talking. But you get nervous, you're waiting. And the next thing I heard them say, well, Ray's going. I said, uh-oh. Yeah. That gives you a little more of a shock to yourself saying, uh-oh, then I'm next, you know. And it was exciting, but of course, there was always, you're nervous, you're worried that something will spring up. But I think God had his hand on it. And I just think that that's what gave me most of my calmness.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about my wife and my kids. We can't control what we can't control. But with all the information and the prep work we've done, again, UPMC has a strong reputation. And so it wasn't anything that it's, quote unquote, irresponsible. So I think, are there nerves? Of course. Yet I think about when we encourage our kids to be kind, be generous, be helpful, be caring, be loving. Yeah, like that was that sense of peace that says, look, we are doing this and that's that. And just a sense of surrendered and believing that God will do what God will do. That was mostly it. And then just really entrusting then the rest of it into the hands of the providers, the healthcare providers, the surgeons, and the support team that's associated with it. Again, I'm kind of clueless in all of this. So I was told to wait where it was and to what Dave says, like, okay, it's time to roll. And so I was rolled to the operating room. And it really was just a really, really fast process in that I knew that I was being rolled in. I saw that I was in the operating room. They put this mask thing on me. I guess it has all the drugs that makes you faint or makes you pass out. And all that lasted less than like 5 minutes or less even. And then I just woke up, which surgery was over. So I had zero memories at all from the whole thing other than like I was rolled in. I remember them putting the mask on me. And then next thing you know, I was being woken up and it took me a while just feeling really groggy of like, wait, what just happened? Where am I again? And they told me it's over and it's done and it's successful. And so, yeah, it felt zero pain and it just went by really, really quickly and felt surreal, if anything.
The surgery itself was just the beginning of a new chapter for both David and Ray. Recovery brought its own challenges and surprises. From David being able to feel the energy from his new kidney, to Ray's remarkably quick return to walking the hospital halls. But perhaps the most profound changes weren't physical at all. 4 years later, as these two men reflect on their shared experience, it's clear that this journey has shaped not just their health, but their perspective on life, service, and what it truly means to be family.
Well, I woke up, I was in the ICU room. Gee, what can I say? I just, like Ray says, you just woke up and I'm looking around. I'm thinking to myself, wow, did that really happen? That I'm sitting here now recovering. I have a new kidney. The pain wasn't bad because naturally they had you on a pain medication. And they told me, they said, if everything continues, if it is, they'll probably, you know, transfer me out of that by the next morning to a regular room to recover. Now, it just so happened that my son came to visit me, and he came in. They let him into the ICU room, and just out of coincidence, it actually, he's a teacher over at Redland High School, and it was one of his former students that was actually the male nurse that was working on me, that was my main provider while I was in there. He had me the whole day after the surgery. So they're striking up a conversation, talking. I'm only catching parts of it. Of their conversation, because they were reminiscing and everything. And I'm just sitting there saying, I don't care. I got a new kidney. That's all I'm worried about. But it was interesting that that happened. And then the pain part, it's funny. We were talking about this, Rail. Remember yesterday, we actually had dinner together with my son and his family. And we were talking about that, the amount of difference in pain. Mine was not that bad. I did take pain medication up until the morning we left, both left on Friday. The operations were done on Tuesday. We left on Friday to go home. From there on, I didn't take any pain medication at all for this surgery. it was kind of unique where they placed the kidney in me. It's down to my right side, actually, from my waist, belt waist, down into that space, as you might say, is where my kidney is. And it was kind of unique because at that point I had, I was down to about 140, 145 pounds. And I could feel the tip of the kidney through the skin because I was kind of thin. And it just amazed me that now this is where the kidney is sitting. And again, the nurses were unbelievable in the hospital, just the care. They would come in and ask, how are you feeling? How's your pain level? Do you think you need to take anything more? It was just amazing to me. And they kept it on, like I had to be on a special floor. They only had one floor because of the COVID. They only had one floor that they kept people with transplants, with any kind of surgery, where it was more critical to keep a safe environment.
I'm a checklist kind of person. So like they had very specific kind of plan that they gave that just helped me just prepare and follow almost like a timeline on like, hey, this is what happens right after the surgery. This is what happens the day following. This is what happens to be discharged 2 to 3 days after. And here's what happens with your pain medicine. So those were all helpful that, again, just feeling a bit more equipped and know what to expect in the day after surgery was done to like 2 weeks after. I've just appreciated how supported I felt. I think they had very clear plans, whether it's once a week for the first month and then like every other month and then up until the kind of 2 year mark in just like, how are you feeling? How are things? So on and so forth. I remember maybe about 6 months in, I felt some pain of sorts. I wasn't sure. And without hesitating, I called them and just notified them. They said, just come on in. And they ran a bunch of tests. And so they just, again, they referring to the transplant team was just super helpful. On the pain management standpoint, I know that the day, or really the hours right after the surgery, as Dave was remarking, Heather, my wife, says, hey, just so you know, that's feeling really good. He's been walking up and down the hallway. And again, that was just really, really moving and touching and joyous for me in that, like, wow, just to see how quick that improvement is already felt on his part. Yeah. So again, just really, really was excited and celebrating how quick the impact it has on Dave immediately right after the surgery. And as you heard earlier, we had dinner yesterday to think about, what, 4 years out now, we get to celebrate Mother's Day as a family together. Or this past weekend, we had a dance recital, or for both my daughters, or my son was running a 2 mile race that he's able to be part of it. And all that, I think, again, would not have been possible without this opportunity and the folks that all play a part of it, whether they are on the intake team side of it, or whether they are the surgeons, or whether they are the scheduling team or the medicine prescribing team. You know, just grateful that we live close by and have the opportunity and the blessing, from UPMC.
Well, I have to say that my outlook on life is just, I've been given a new life thanks to Ray. Eventually, I could have lasted on dialysis who knows how long. And it just, I'm not putting down anyone who's on dialysis by any means. I really can appreciate what they have to go through day in, day out. It's not something easy. And I was spared of that. And it just, now my life is, I try to do the best I can. I have done several things to different places to put out the word that you can donate, that it is not something that's going to be terrible to your life from then on. It's like Rhea said, it's, you have a good kidney. You can run on a good kidney, you might say. It's hard to gather all the emotions that I have. I don't even know how to say it. It gives me, sometimes, like I think we all do, we forget what you actually went through with it, and you forget the miracle that God gave us between the both of us, Ray not having any problems afterwards, me having a new kidney. It's an amazing thing to have happen to you. And where I can help. Now, Ray does a lot more than I do as far as that, as far as helping people in different organizations and stuff. But anyone I can talk to that is in the situation that I was in, needs a kidney and stuff, it's just something I can sit and talk with them, which I do. There's been several, actually, where I have my blood drawn at the UPMC lab here in Dillsburg. There was one of the ladies that register you in when you go in for blood work. She had been on dialysis for about 7 years now. And 3 or 4 weeks ago, she actually got her kidney. So every time I went in, she would ask me questions and, you know, what happened here? What did that this part play? And she went on, and here she ended up getting her kidney. And then one of the nurses that does the drawing of blood there, her father was going to get a kidney. And it actually happened within 2 days of the register lady getting her kidney. Her father got a kidney from an anonymous donor. And it's just, it's amazing to me what can happen when you people stop and think that gift of life you've been given from the very beginning. And if you're able to share part of that.
Yeah, last week I had a chance to go to Philly with about maybe 30 that's organized by UPMC transplant team to be part of the donor dash that they run each year. And I wrote a bit of a reflection from that and I shared it with some of the UPMC members team. And I'll just read it to you. To the world, you may be one person, but to one person, you may be the world, Dr. Seuss. 4 years ago, I walked around with two kidneys, never realizing that donating one would impact not just someone else's life, but mine. Confession, I hate challenges, I avoid pain, and I run from suffering. But here's what I've learned and am relearning. Behind every challenge is a chance to be a blessing, to share and to serve others. Yes, pain is unpleasant, but often the people who radiate the most kindness and strength are those who endured the hardest storms. Suffering is uncomfortable, leave scars even, but it is the redemptive way. So that Sunday, I stood among thousands of people at Philadelphia's Donor Dash, some still waiting for the call, others alive today because one person said yes. So I want to encourage, you know, I know that there's still quite a bit of education that needs to happen around organ donation, but yeah, just continue to encourage others and spread the word that it matters and it does save lives and we get to be part of making a difference. This is probably my third or fourth one now. For my work, I talk a lot about servant leadership. I help support leaders and organizations in that regard. And again, I think about sometimes what does it look like for our values, translating those values into actions. And so what does it look like to, we may not be able to solve all the problems in the world, but to the opportunities that's right before us, how do we respond? And what a joy and honor and a blessing to be able to be a part of supporting and making a difference in the lives of those around us. So I think going back to the quote from Dr. Seuss, right? Like, we just need to respond to the person right in front of us and the opportunity in front of us and not feel the need or sense of overwhelm that we need to solve everyone's issues or problems, but we are called to just make a difference in those right in front of us.
I'll just add the one thing to go back to your original thing about me. Have to take a nap every day after thing. Probably in 4 years now, I've probably taken maybe five. I haven't had any need for a nap since the transplant. It just was unbelievable, the change, you know, in your health and your energy level and everything. It's hard to believe that it can make that much difference.
David and Ray's story reminds us that behind every medical miracle are real people facing extraordinary choices. From Ray's decision to donate, to the countless UPMC team members who provided exceptional care, to David's commitment to encouraging others facing similar journeys. This is what healthcare at its best looks like. As Ray shared from his reflection after the Philadelphia Donor Dash, to the world you may be one person, but to one person, you may be the world. Thank you to David White and Ray Chung for sharing their incredible story with us today. If this episode moved you, please take a moment to rate and review in their words. It helps others discover these important stories. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. And until next time, thank you for listening to In Their Words, where every story matters and every voice deserves to be heard.